law forbidding interracial marriage. Faced with prison, the Lovings took a plea bargain that mandated they leave Virginia for 25 years. But they missed their home and family, and in 1963, Mildred contacted Attorney General Robert Kennedy and the American Civil Liberties Union. The Loving story narrates the lives of Mildred and Richard Loving and their historic fight for recognition of their marriage all the way to the Supreme Court. Next off is Willa Cather, The Road Is All. Will be shown on Tuesday, June 21st, and is directed by Joe Geyer. It follows Willa Cather, the author, who as a child was taken from her home in Virginia and transplanted into the wild Nebraska frontier. Vast and empty, she felt erased. Cather survived and thrived on the plains, eventually pioneering her way east to New York City, where she wrote her great novels, Old Pioneers, The Song of the Lark, My Antonia, Death Comes for the Archbishop, and Pulitzer Prize-winning One of Ours. The Road Is All tells of the transforming power of art, illustrating Cather's life through dramatic reenactments of scenes from her most famous novels. Your third choice is Broadway, the American musical, Putting It Together, and it can be seen on Wednesday, June 22nd, narrated by Julie Andrews. This film examines the rise of the blockbuster musical on Broadway in the 80s, led by London imports such as Les Miserables, The Phantom of the Opera, and Miss Saigon. This resurgence of the musical after a period of artistic decline led to Stephen Sondheim's Sunday in the Park, Julie Taymor's The Lion King, and Mel Brooks' The Producers. Reinvigorating the art form and creating new audiences, Broadway during this era faced challenges from the AIDS crisis to the aftermath of 9/11, but responded with successful musicals from Rent to Wicked, shown in rehearsals leading up to their Broadway debut. Next up, I will lead the discussion for The Life and Times of Rosie the Riveter on Thursday, June 24th. It was directed by Connie Fields and selected for preservation in the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress. The U.S. entry into World War II created an unprecedented demand for new workers, and notions of what was proper work for women changed overnight. From this, Rosie the Riveter, a symbol, was born, women working on the production and home fronts during the war. The documentary is told by the women themselves, five former Rosies who recall their experiences in Detroit, Los Angeles, New York, and San Francisco. Their testimony is compared and contrasted with rare archival materials from recruitment films, posters, and music of the period, and reflects a very different story than the one the women actually experienced. And finally, on Friday, June 25th, is Coney Island, directed by Rick Burns. Before Disneyland, there was Coney Island, and by the turn of the 20th century, this tiny piece of New York real estate was internationally famous for its public beaches and innovative entertainments. On summer Sundays, three great parks, Steeplechase, Luna Park, and Dreamland, competed for the patronage of a half million people. By day, it was the world's most amazing amusement park, and by night, it lit up with electric splendor, bringing public amusement to the masses at the dawn of a new era of technology and mass culture. For any or all of the films, registration is required, but all movies are free and open to OLLI members and their guests. For more detailed information, you can contact me at reeling3255@gmail.com, or you can go to the OLLI membership website, olli.illinois.edu. And that wraps it up this week for Connie's Hot Flashes on the Movies.
Needs man, and man must have his mate that no one can deny. It's still the same old story. The fight for.
Hey, this is WFT Champagne 90.1 FM. You're listening to The Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. Before I really get into the program, let's have a little Tom Morello. Which side are you on?
good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
This is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. And yes, in a couple of months, we're going to have to decide which side you're on. This is an election year for President of the United States, and you get to choose between a progressive and a regressive candidate. Maybe. Here on the Midwatch, I try to take some of the spin off the Dittohead media machine, correct the lies and misinformation of the RNC and the leadership of the Republican Party. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of WFT, its board of directors, station manager, associates, or Prairie Air, Inc. For the most part, my friends, it is me out here on this limb sawing as fast as I can, but because it's an open line call-in show, you can help. 217-FLY-LIVE, that's 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483 will get you on the air, and it can be your opinion as well, or maybe instead of. You can talk about it, the topics that I bring up, or any topic basically that you think is pertinent to life in the state of Illinois or the United States of America or the world for that matter. We have lots of choices, lots of things to talk about. Tonight is the Big Al's Community Chat. Be here in a couple of hours, about 8 o'clock. That's a program that I think you'll enjoy at least as much as you do this one. So, if you would be advised to stay tuned to that, we'd appreciate it as well. I also would like to remind you that WFT is community radio for East Central Illinois. We do not do, we are not shills for any corporation. We do public service announcements. And as such, we are always hungry for money, especially since the Republicans have managed to cut funding for so many free speech type programs. It's really kind of their typical anti-constitutional stance of the Republican Party, but they're cutting funding here and there and everywhere they can to keep stations like this off the air, and we need you to go to WEFT.org and follow the support links to help us out. You're the only reason we're here. And you're the only salvation we have of being here. So get your computer out, go to WFT.org, follow the support links, and make as much of a contribution as you can. Anything that you can do to help us out is appreciated. Anything that you can do to help the Constitution and the First Amendment out is truly the American ideal. We have lots of things that we can talk about today, and I'm running this program today just a little bit different than I have other programs. I have a couple of things that I'd like to throw out there about the upcoming election, and you can respond to those, or after a little bit, I'm going to get into some pre-recorded pieces from other sources. And I hope I get their credits properly announced. In any event, tomorrow we have a vote in Britain on whether or not Britain is going to stay in the European Union. Now, this vote tomorrow is a lot different than the vote was in Greece when they were considering leaving the European Union. And the reason it's different is because the nations of the European Union use the euro as their currency, except for Britain. Britain maintained the British pound as its currency. Britain has been much more physically sound than Greece was. When the vote for Greece to exit the European Union was on the table, if Greece had left the European Union, the value of their currency would start at zero, and the market would decide where it stood. People stood in Greece to lose 75-80% of the value of the money they had in euros, should they have to go back to the drachma. They chose, rightfully so, to stay in the European Union. Britain, on the other hand, is different in that it still has the British pound and has always maintained the British pound. So tomorrow's vote, whether it is to leave the European Union or to stay in it, will have a, what I believe to be, a very short-term effect on the market. If Britain decides to stay in the European Union tomorrow, the market's going to jump. I would not be surprised to see the Dow rise 300 points tomorrow if the vote is to stay in the European Union. If, on the other hand, the vote is to leave the European Union, the opposite could occur, and the Dow Jones Industrials could lose 300 points. But tomorrow is going to be a very risky day in the market. If you are willing to take a chance one way or the other, maybe you can get in before the votes are counted tomorrow and make your bet. From my point of view, with the way the potential stands for in or out being nearly equal, I think that tomorrow is a good day to be neutral and see where it goes. Because if we get that 300-point jump in the market, we will almost certainly see a softening of those positions. And if we get the 300-point loss in the market will almost certainly see a return to where it is today. So tomorrow, until you know the answer to the question, I think tomorrow's a good day to stay out of the market. We might know the answer to the question before the market closes. And if we do, you might want to take that position at the low of the market, which could be the close. But if Britain decides to stay in the Union, I'm not sure it's a good time to chase the market. With all that said, the best time to invest in the stock market is when you have the money. Because over time, the stock market will go up. Unless we have a total financial meltdown. Kind of like the one that Donald Trump is proposing. A total market meltdown. And we'll get there in just a minute. But first, I want to remind you that WFT is community radio for East Central Illinois. We do not do commercials. We do public service announcements. Here's your first.
Today, a new creature walks among us, causing fear, mayhem, and injury.
Stay back, children.
Look out for the dreaded digital deadwalkers. With faces pressed against their little handheld devices, they put all good citizens in harm's way.
Oh, hey, dude, I'm walking here.
Sorry, I didn't see you.
A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who want to keep everyone well-connected with healthy bones.
Yes, be careful out there. Not only walking with your cell phone, but texting with your cell phone and driving. Be careful. As nice as those cell phones are when you're sitting still and able to concentrate on them, they are so distracting when you're moving that they are a hazard. And I want you to be safe because I want you to be here next Wednesday at 6 o'clock when I come back. Why is Donald Trump such a threat to the world economy? I've told you this before. Perhaps you've forgotten. But let me remind you that Donald Trump is the guru of bankruptcy. He is the guru of just flat-out non-payment to his suppliers. Right now, there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 lawsuits against Trump Industries' various entities by middle-income suppliers because Trump doesn't want to pay for what he has agreed to buy. Services have been performed. Trump refuses to pay. He says they're insufficiently done, poorly done. Some 3,000 lawsuits, nearly 3,000 lawsuits are filed right now in action, in court, against Donald Trump because middle-class American businesses have been refused payment by Trump Industries. Is that the kind of person you want to be president of the United States? Somebody who will not pay their debt? Four times, Donald Trump has had businesses that he built. He put his name on them frequently, his stamp of approval. Four times, those businesses have declared bankruptcy. And each of those four times, thanks to the protections of the one percenters, he's been able to avoid personal bankruptcy. You and I don't get to avoid personal bankruptcy, but the one percenters do, and Donald Trump and his corporations have been able to protect Donald Trump from personal bankruptcy from the four companies that have declared bankruptcy. The first time Donald Trump declared bankruptcy, it was with one of his casinos in Atlantic City. And the bondholders, which are mostly middle-class Americans through their pension funds, because pension funds needs cash flow to pay out the benefits that they've promised, a lot of corporate bonds are held by pension funds. Those pension funds service middle-class Americans. And four times Donald Trump's businesses have declared bankruptcy and eventually had those debts eliminated at no cost to Donald Trump personally. Well, I take that back. There was a small penalty, I think $100 million, for one of his casino bankruptcies. Donald Trump's first bankruptcy was a very, very tricky setup. I believe it was his first. It might have been the second. But he set up a deal with those unions because they needed their money back and they needed the income to pay pension benefits. He set up a special kind of bond the first time he declared bankruptcy on his casino in Atlantic City. And that deal that he made with the creditors so that the bonds would maintain 100% of their base value was that when it came to the interest, he would pay, when he could, as much as he could. In other words, the interest rate was knocked down to zero if Donald Trump couldn't pay any interest. The principal was still supposedly intact. Donald Trump made no interest payments on those bonds for 5 years because that was the deal. The money would sit there in Donald Trump's pocket for 5 years. And at the end of that 5 years, Donald Trump declared his second bankruptcy on the same casino for the same reason. He couldn't pay the debt. And for 5 years, Donald Trump got the consultation fees for running the casino. And the bankruptcy judge decided that Donald Trump had to reimburse $100 million or so to the bankruptcy court for dispersal to the various debtors, or creditors, rather. Four times Donald Trump has declared bankruptcy. He now has a casino in Las Vegas. Last summer, Donald Trump had an event at his casino in Las Vegas. At Donald Trump's casino in Las Vegas, at the time of his event there, his employees were trying to form a union. And they were trying to form a union because Nevada is a right-to-work state. They were trying to form a union so that they could receive the same amount of wages as the union next door, the casino union next door. I believe it's a I'm sure it's a right-to-work state. Anyway, the union casinos, their employees make roughly $2 an hour more than Trump's employees. And yet Donald Trump is telling middle-class Americans that he's going to improve their financial situation when at businesses that he literally runs himself, he refuses to pay the prevailing wage of other union casinos. Are you serious? Are you serious? How can you believe this guy? How can you believe this guy? And the answer to that is you can't. Today there was a speech by Donald Trump. Typical of Donald Trump's speeches, it was mostly a ad hominem attack against Hillary Clinton. But in that attack, a lot of things he said were just outright lies. One of the things he said was that Hillary was a liar. If you go back to Donald Trump's campaign speeches and you analyze the truthfulness of those speeches, what you find is that 59% of the things Donald Trump says is a lie. And sometimes it's even pants on fire lies. They are so ridiculously, obviously untrue. 59% of the time, if Donald Trump's mouth is moving, he's lying. Let's look at Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, given the same analysis, going back to all of her campaign speeches, you find out that Hillary Clinton is lying a total of, oh my God, she is a liar, 12% of the time. Which is the better person for you? We all say things that aren't true sometimes. Every one of us do. Whether it's because you tell your girlfriend that you love the hairdo that she just got, or it's your mother that you say she's got on great clothes and you think that she just came out of the subway. We all tell lies. 12% of the time, Hillary Clinton has been untruthful. 59% of the time, Donald Trump has been untruthful. Who would you choose to ask a question of and get the correct answer? That's the person you should vote for. The more truthful one. It is 33 minutes past the hour here at WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. You can give me a call at 217-FLY-LIVE. That's 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483. Give me a call, add your voice to the program, let's have a conversation. We can indeed figure stuff out all by our little bitty lonesomes if we just give it a shot, if we just try. WFT is community radio for East Central Illinois. As such, we do not do commercials. We do public service announcements. Here's one now.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is a Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. 217-FLY-LIVE's my number. What we talk about is up to you. It's an open line. Give me a call. We'll talk. I may even prod you a little bit with things that are annoying me. The Republicans I forget which one member of the Republican National Committee it was, but the Republican National Committee, almost from day one of Donald Trump's presidency, has told the people of this country that it is not them that decide who the nominee is, it's the party. And that seems to be correct. Donald Trump has well over the requisite number of delegates won in various states to win the nomination to run on the Republican ticket in November for President of the United States. So, the Republican Party has finally figured out a way to stop him. The Rules Committee of the Republican Party is put together, if you will, by the Republican Party. Candidates, as in the Democratic Party, get some of the people and the various candidates get to choose some of the delegates as well. But the party gets to choose their delegates. And their delegates can frequently sway the direction of the Rules Committee. It looks like this time around, the Republican Party will be able to have enough support to change the rules so that Donald Trump will not win on the first ballot. And that throws the convention open to whomever else they may choose. You see, the Republican Party is looking at, and they haven't done this yet because they have to be there to vote on the rules. They vote on the rules, whether or not to accept the rules as proposed at the convention. But one of the proposed rules for this year's convention is that any delegate has the right to abstain on the first vote for any reason they want. They do not have to tell you the reason. It can be a religious reason. It can be an economic reason. It could be a Donald Trump reason. I don't like Donald Trump. I'm not going to vote. I abstain. And if enough people abstain, if that rule is in the rules of the convention, and enough people abstain from voting, Donald Trump goes to a second vote. In a second vote, Donald Trump's chances of getting the nomination, in my humble opinion, are zero. So even though many of you voted for Donald Trump, the Republican Party, because it doesn't believe in democracy to start with, the Republican Party is trying to come up with a way to prevent Donald Trump from being the nominee. They said from the beginning that they would stop Donald Trump. And now they've got this fancy abstinence plan. Paul Ryan has let the cat out of the bag, if you will. by talking about it. You know Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. I'm not sure whether he's willing to be chosen by the delegates at the committee or not. He says not, but we don't know until he really does it at the convention. Whether he may be drafted at the convention. That was the word I was looking for there. His position on being drafted may change at the convention. He may announce 72 hours before the convention that he's changed his position on being drafted, and suddenly Paul Ryan is a viable candidate at the national convention. Suddenly, the abstinence plank of the Rules Committee is something that can prevent your vote from mattering. You like it? The Republican Party is all about preventing the people from being able to enjoy democracy. They've proven that year after year after year as they have thrown eligible voters off the voting rolls in state after Republican state after Republican state. They have proven that by making it difficult for poor people to get the proper documentation so that they have a right to vote. Even though they voted for the past 40 years, they still may not be able to vote because they may not be able to get the right kind of documentation. It's that kind of obstruction against democracy that proves that the Republican Party is the least democratic party there. Which brings us back to the Democratic Party, by the way. The Democratic Party is the party most likely to give you a democratic outcome. You vote for democracy, you vote Democratic. You vote for the one percenters, for a plutocracy, you vote Republican. It's really as simple as that. And it doesn't matter at what level. Used to be at every level, you knew whether or not a candidate was a Democrat or a Republican. And that's getting harder and harder to tell. Because most political advertising signs today do not, especially for local offices, do not indicate party affiliation. And that, my friends, is one of the reasons why so many local governments have turned out Republican. They have the money to get their name in front of you because the press is controlled by six corporations. The Republican Party is the corporate party. As was proven yet again today, as Donald Trump's speech was played in its entirety on MSNBC even. I had to do some work, so I'm not sure whether Hillary's was played in its entirety. But historically, throughout this campaign, it has not been. And for the first 6 months of the campaign, Bernie Sanders' name was not even mentioned. And 9 months into the campaign, if you happen to call Penny for your thoughts, Bernie Sanders' name was not even mentioned until I called and mentioned it as a viable candidate. Just wasn't. And yet Bernie almost was able to pull it off. And had he not been blocked out of media outlets for the first 6 months of the campaign season, he would have certainly have won. Because Bernie Sanders wants what's best for America. Bernie Sanders, so far it seems, has pulled the Democratic Party back towards a position of democracy. Back towards a position of improving relations for and with and to middle-class Americans. We thought that Barack Obama was going to do that in 2008 because that's what his speeches told us. And although Barack Obama has been better than any recent Republican president, he didn't do the things he could have done had he truly been looking out for us. Case in point is the Affordable Care Act. When it was becoming evident that Al Franken was going to become a senator and become the 60th vote in the Senate, a filibuster-proof number, Barack Obama should have had Medicare for All in his back pocket to put on the table. But Barack Obama was trusting enough of the system to believe that the Republicans really were interested in helping middle-class Americans. And the way the Republicans have dealt with the Affordable Care Act proves they have no interest in middle- and low-income people, except as useful idiots. That's their only value to the Republican Party, is a useful idiot that will vote for them. Fly Live. That's the number. 217-359-5483. That's the number. If you disagree with me, I'd like to hear it. Otherwise, I will just assume, no, heck no, I will know that you understand that people that vote Republican, that are middle and lower income families, don't know what they're voting for. And they don't care. It's 49 minutes past the hour here at WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. Let's have a little pick-me-up here. Jason Aldean, Tattoos on This Town. let's see if I can start this a different way. Windows 10. Ah, doesn't like that one. How about if I do this for you, Keith Urban?
Smoking fire, I didn't feel a thing. But suddenly I was rising higher, and I felt like I just made the biggest mistake. When I thought about my unborn child, when I thought about my wife, and the answer rang out clear from somewhere up above. No greater gift has man than to lay down his life for love. And what good would I give my life? Or could I make that sacrifice? If it came down to it, could I take the bullet of a hood? Yes, I would.
Hey, this is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to The Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. give me a call, 217-FLY-LIVE. That's 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483. Give me a call. Add your voice to the program. Let's have a conversation. Some people say having conversations can figure stuff out. The reality is you can only have a conversation and figure anything out with somebody that's willing to listen or does not have an agenda that is totally unacceptable with you. We have a governor in the state of Illinois. Name's Rauner. And he has a plan, if you will, to revitalize our state. And his plan is really an agenda to make middle-class employers or employees poorer. You see, his agenda, his turnaround agenda, as he calls it, turns back the clock, turns the country back. It does turn around the progress that Democrats have made and goes back to a time when the state of Illinois' minimum wage backed the federal minimum wage. His turnaround agenda turns the state around back to a time when we had no unions, because he wants to make Illinois a right-to-work state. His turnaround agenda takes Illinois back to the days of the Haymarket Massacre. The Haymarket Massacre occurred in Chicago. There was a labor dispute, several labor disputes, in the city of Chicago because it was an industrial area. The McCormick Reaper plant was in Chicago. And the McCormick Reaper plant had developed ways to automate some of its production, thereby cutting jobs, lowering wages. And so the people who worked there chose to strike. Stop the plant's production entirely. And since they didn't have union protection, the corporation was able to hire thugs from a corporation called Brinks to break up the union demonstrations. I suggest you read about it. The Haymarket Massacre. The book has been rewritten. And it's very informative. But that's what Rauner wants to do. Turn Illinois back to a right-to-work state. Back to a time when our minimum wage matched the federal minimum wage. Cutting the incomes of every person in cities and towns like Homer and other central Illinois towns where the minimum wage still is the minimum wage. And in Homer, the minimum wage is $8.25 an hour, the state minimum wage. If Rauner gets his way, Illinois' minimum wage will go back to the federal minimum wage, giving those people a wage cut. Sound like the right thing to do for a poor working class family? Vote Republican. It's what they want. It must be what you want. It is 1 minute and 27 seconds past the hour here at WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. A while ago, I was talking about the veracity, the honesty of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. NBC's Katie Tour did a little fact-checking on Donald Trump's speech from today. Here that is.
Has covered the Trump campaign from start to present day. Katie, what did you make of this one?
Well, this was a full frontal assault on Hillary Clinton and her record. He hit a number of points that we expected him to hit, trying to paint this as about the people, not the politicians, saying that she has her campaign slogan as I'm with her. His campaign slogan, in contrast to that, would be I'm with you, the voters. He also tried to paint her as dangerous for American interests over here in this country, because of her foreign policy overseas, talked a lot about decisions that were made to go into Libya, the pullout of Iraq, stuff like that. He also spoke momentarily about a 3 a.m. phone call, and we've heard him talk about this a lot on the campaign trail, a 3 a.m. phone call in which Hillary Clinton was allegedly sleeping when Benghazi was happening. It was well established from the 11 hours of hearings that she was not sleeping during this. She was working from home overnight, and that this was already over by 3 a.m. local time. This happened around 9 p.m. local time because of the time difference between here and Benghazi. A bit more of a fact checked here. Brian, Trump was reaching out to peaceful Muslims during this speech before he went on to speak more harshly about them. He talked about ISIS threatening their way of life. It's interesting for him because he has been on a Muslim ban kick for some time now, since last December, and lately he's been casting doubt on even American Muslims, saying that they know what is going on with their neighbors and they're not telling anyone. So that is interesting. We do know that his campaign manager, Paul Manafort, has been trying to back away from the Muslim ban for some time. So this seemed like it had Paul Manafort's stamp all over it. He also talked about refugees, saying we have nothing in place to screen refugees. That is not true. There is screening in place. It takes about 2 years. He talked about the Clinton Foundation being corrupt, that they were trading access for favors and money. It should be noted that Donald Trump and Ivanka Trump both donated to the Clinton Foundation themselves, gave between $100,000 and $250,000. That's Donald Trump. Ivanka gave between $5,000 and $10,000. Donald Trump also gave to Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign, and he gave to her presidential campaign as well. That is well documented. He's called it blood money, said he's a businessman who is just trying to protect his business, and that's the smart thing to do. Blood money for the Clinton Foundation, because he had no idea where that money was going. He also talked about Bill Clinton being responsible for losing jobs on NAFTA, and it is estimated by a Ralph Nader's group, Public Citizen, that about 1 million jobs have been lost on NAFTA. He also talked a lot about trade and deficits. It's important to note, though, that the last time this country had a surplus was during Bill Clinton's era. Since President Bush took over, this country has recorded deficits every year. That's largely due to the various invasions in Iraq and Afghanistan. He talked about making this country bigger and stronger, hitting jobs, jobs, jobs on the campaign trail, certainly in West Virginia and Pittsburgh. He's talked about coal miners bringing their jobs back. The reality, according to experts, though, is that many of those jobs just aren't functional in a modern economy, that those industries need to move forward, become cleaner energy in order to be viable. That's just a handful of the various things that Donald Trump talked about during this speech. I'm sure there's going to be more fact-checking to come. But the general sense, Brian, was that he was trying to paint himself as more for the American voter, Hillary Clinton, the status quo, a politician, in it for herself and the interests of Washington, rather than the folks at home.
Yes. The Democrats are evil, evil people. Could the Democrats do more? Yes, they can. And you know what? Today, the Democrats finally decided to take a stand on an issue that should be on everybody's mind. That issue is gun control. Today, the Democrats in the House did the only thing that they could to try to advance the smallest limitation on a person's ability to buy a firearm. A limit that the NRA and the NRA drones are fighting, even as the Republican leadership in the United States House of Representatives gaveled the House as being closed for public business. And they did close the House for public business, because that's what it takes in the House to do that. One more vote on the Republican side closes the House for business. One more vote on the Democratic side closes the House to the other party for business. The Senate, on the other hand, takes a majority, a supermajority, to get business done. Or, if you like to look at it the way I look at it, it takes the tyranny of the minority to prevent business from being done. In the first 2 years of President Barack Obama's administration, there were literally hundreds of pieces of legislation passed by Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats. In the first 2 years, the Republicans filibustered hundreds of pieces of legislation that would have helped middle-class Americans. The Lilly Ledbetter Act, since it was the first piece of legislation passed by the Democratic House, woke them up. The Republicans, that is. It woke up the Republicans in the Senate to the power of the minority. You see, the Lilly Ledbetter Act basically said that corporations could no longer pay women less than they pay men for doing the same work. Because if the woman finds out about it, she can sue for lost wages. Prior to the Lilly Ledbetter Act, if a woman excuse me for that, and I missed my cough button. If a woman found out 2 years after she had been hired that her wages in 30 years would be 30% less than that of a man, I guess the theory is she could have sued. Of course, every corporation tells every employee not to talk about how much they make. That, my friends, is illegal for a corporation to tell you not to talk to your fellow employees about how much you make. That's illegal. But the corporation can fire you if they catch you doing it. So that's a law that makes no legal justice. So Lilly Ledbetter worked for 30 years as a vice president of a major corporation. And when she retired, she found out that she was making about 30% less than a male vice president doing a similar job. So her pension benefit was much less than the man's. Lilly Ledbetter took it to the conservative Supreme Court, and the conservative Supreme Court in 2008, I believe it was, decided that she had no standing because it had been more than 18 months since she was first hired at the corporation, and the statute of limitations had ran on her ability to sue. She had to have sued within that first 18 months of employment, that 30 years later her salary would be 70% of that of a man's. Is there anybody out there, anybody, 217 Fly Live, anybody out there that thinks that if she had sued within that first 18 months of employment for, let's say $110 billion that she might be due in 30 years, any court would have believed her regardless of the actuarial soundness of her lawsuit? I don't hear the phone ringing, do you? That tells me that none of you think that that any court would have heard that. And they wouldn't have. So the first piece of legislation passed by the Democratic House after President Obama's election in 2008, it was passed in February of 2009, was called the Lilly Ledbetter Act, because it gave that woman the right to sue within 18 months of the time she finds out about the problem with differing wages. It just made the law reasonable. You can't predict 30 years into the future, how much you're going to make a year. And piggybacking onto that concept, we can't predict 100 years into the future what the pension debt for the state of Illinois is going to be, and yet Bruce Rauner and his Republican cohorts, the dittohead media, the corporate media, get all bent out of shape if you suggest to them that actuarial numbers are not actually true. They are simply estimates based on a certain set of information that is certainly not going to be true in 100 years. It's just not possible to have zero progress in 100 years. And yet the dittohead media, the corporate media, gets all bent out of shape if you don't tell everybody that the Illinois pension debt is going to be $110 billion in 100 years. Oh, that's terrible. It's actuarially true. Well, my friends, it was actuarially true that the Affordable Care Act would have less than $100 billion of cost to the American people 20 years in the future. It was actuarially true in 2010 when the Affordable Care Act was passed. The problem is the Republicans had placed poison pills in the Affordable Care Act and subsequently changed the income-producing parts of the Affordable Care Act so that they don't produce any income. So now the cost of the Affordable Care Act is many times what it would have been had the Republicans not attacked it the way they did. We have a caller. Good evening. You're on WFT. This is Reasonable Man Stan. What's your first name?
I'm Diana.
Diana, welcome to the show.
You touched a few nerves here in my house.
Well, that's what I'm here for, Diana. I'm really glad that I got your attention.
Yes, you certainly have.
What's up?
Well, I asked then, and I still ask now, what in the heck is a billionaire wanting to do with the state of Illinois? That's the number one question. I mean,
are you talking about Bruce Rauner?
I certainly am.
Okay.
I mean, I'm kind of wondering why he hasn't been impeached yet. Actually, because the man has done absolutely nothing for this state since he's gotten into office.
He hasn't broken any laws. That's why he hasn't been impeached.
Well, he hasn't passed any either.
Well, he doesn't have to. That's not part of his job description that he sign legislation.
I see. He has no control over the House, then, I take it. Why we haven't got a budget passed.
Oh, he has control over the House. He's vetoed budgets that have been passed by the House.
I see. I gotcha. So we're in war with that.
Yes. He wants to turn the state of Illinois into a right-to-work state. Illinois being a right-to-work state would reduce the incomes of middle-class Americans.
Uh-huh.
He wants to do away with prevailing wage laws, which would reduce the incomes of middle-class Americans.
Well, I say we all get together and impeach him anyway, then.
He wants to do away with the ability of the state to not touch state retirees' pensions, reduce them. He wants to be able to reduce current state retirees' pensions by an amendment to the Constitution that gives him the power to do that.
Mm-hmm. So since we've given him this power, then we need to take the power away somehow.
The only way Illinois has to take that power away is to wait the 4 years until the next election and vote him out.
Well, I figured we should have never voted him in to begin with, what I'm thinking.
More people should have been listening to my show.
True. And also, too, with Donald Trump, the man is radical, yes, but a lot of what he says about the Muslim at the risk of national home security, I guess, I'm going to say this. We don't know who ISIS is. But yet, we allow all these people to come into our country, buy up our land, set up businesses, etc. And yes, some of them are good neighbors and some of them are not. But like I said, we don't know who these people are. And we definitely need some kind of profiling in this country. Otherwise, we're going to get some more of this Orlando stuff happening even in our own city. This is what I think.
Now
I'm sure, like I said, Donald Trump is not totally stupid. I mean, the man is a billionaire after all, but on that note, again, I'm going to ask, what does a billionaire who already has the world by the tail want to do with the presidency?
Well, let's just talk about Bruce Rauner for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Rauner has said in the past that he wants to do away with the minimum wage.
But that's
period.
Not going to get him anywhere.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess from a business sense it would.
It absolutely would.
Yeah, okay, I got you now. Now we're going to talk business.
If he only gets the Illinois minimum wage pushed back to the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, uh-huh, that still helps him.
Yeah, and then that throws everybody out on the streets.
It doesn't throw them out on the streets.
Well,
it just makes them work more hours.
Makes them work more hours for less money.
Well,
because
they
once the taxes get done with the overtime, then there's nothing left for them.
Well, so, no. Taxes don't work that way. I mean...
Oh, but they do.
No. With a progressive tax rate, which is what we have in this country, for the first $25,000, I think it is, you pay a percentage. Mm-hmm. For the next $25,000, you pay a percentage on that next $25,000 that's a little bit more. And then on that next $25,000, you pay a percentage on that next $25,000 that is a little bit more. But for average Americans, maybe not average Americans, but for low-income Americans, they don't pay any federal income tax. If you make less than $50,000 a year as a family of four, you're... federal income tax is zero.
I see.
Because you get a thing called an earned income tax credit.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay.
You get a thing called a child care credit.
Yes, I knew about that.
You get there are all these credits where it takes a $50,000 married, two children, family of four to pay the first dime of federal income tax. If you as an individual with one child make $12,000 a year, you get all of your money back that has been withheld in taxes plus about $2,500.
Mm-hmm. So when Rauner gets done, we're not going to have any of that.
Well, Rauner doesn't control the federal tax code. But Rauner does control the state tax code. And when you look at the state tax code, we've been at a 3% range basically since 1973.
Okay.
It's been up a little bit. It's been back to 3%. It's been up a little bit. It's been back to 3%. Now we're on an upside at 3.75%. But the inflation since 1973, or whenever we started that 3% flat tax, mm-hmm, has not been zero.
Right.
So the costs have gone up for the state.
Right.
The number of people doing the jobs. We've got more police today than we had in 1973. We've got more teachers today than we had in 1973. And on and on and on. And yet we still have the same tax rate.
Right.
So we're going to have debt.
Right.
The only way to get out of debt is to pay for what you want. And if you don't want an education system, God love you, keep
right.
the tax rate where it is.
Right. Right. So.
I'm not shouting at you.
I'm learning. I'm learning here because there's a lot of things that I don't know myself. So.
No, if we had a tax rate, if we had a progressive tax rate, Illinois' deficit would be zero. We do not have a progressive tax rate because a flat tax means more money in the pockets of the one percenters. a flat tax works to the benefit of the one percenters because it moves the cost of government down the wage scale, the income scale, to lower income people because the amount of money received from the one percenters doesn't change as their incomes go up.
Right.
If you make $10,000, you pay 3%. Let's say Illinois' tax rate was 3%. You pay 3% of your income. To somebody making $10,000, 3% is it could be a rental payment. It could be what it costs you for heat and electricity. If you're making $1 million and you pay 3%, what is that? Your telephone bill, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rich get richer, poor get poor.
It's all about a flat tax is all about transferring wealth to the upper income people.
Right.
And every one of these Republican politicians that say flat tax this and flat tax that are wanting to turn the nation into the same tax hole, if you will, that Illinois is in.
Right, I got you. Yeah.
What was that in the background?
Oh, he says, what about a flat tax on the bank system?
Well, there are proposals out there to have what's called a transaction tax. And a transaction tax would be a tax on people that trade stocks. And I think that's a good idea. I don't see any reason it wouldn't be nearly as high as a sales tax, but even a transaction tax of 1/10 of 1% would be a lot of money to the federal government when you consider that each of the various stocks exchanges transfer literally billions of shares of stock a day. That's a huge amount of money to the federal government. But that's also a huge amount of money that most of it goes to the top 10% in this country. And the top 10% do not want to pay for the services they get. They want you to pay for them. Have him say those F words a little softer. If I can hear them, other people can hear them.
Yeah, and I was trying to keep it clean.
Yeah, we got to keep it clean as we can. What else you got, Diana? You got anything positive to say?
Well, I was kind of curious as what would happen if Bernie still remained on the ballot.
You mean as a third party?
Yep.
We would have a Trump victory.
Oh, no, we don't want that.
No, we don't. Our system...
I tell you, in all honesty, I really don't know about Hillary.
Well,
she's better than the...
unfortunately, it's another time when we were voting for the lesser of two evils.
Yes.
And I understand that. But
yes.
Hillary is a huge lesser of two evils because Hillary, or whoever wins this presidential election, is guaranteed to have one nominee to the Supreme Court. Right now, the Supreme Court is 4-4,
right.
Liberals and conservatives.
Right.
Whoever is elected will be able to be the one to choose the next Supreme Court member.
Yeah.
And if I was President Obama, and come November the 9th, Hillary had won, I would find the most liberal eligible person I could and withdraw the current nominee's nomination and put that person in front of the Republican.
Oh, well, there is no doubt that we need a Congress overhaul. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, the Supreme Court really makes a lot of the laws. Because they get to decide what's constitutional and what's not constitutional.
Right.
And when they did the Citizens United decision in 2010, that really It really damaged our democracy.
Yes.
Possibly beyond repair.
Yes.
And the only way to repair our democracy is to vote Democratic, because we have to have another liberal justice on the Supreme Court.
Yes. I agree.
And this guy that Obama has put up now, what's his name?
Oh, geez. He would have to ask me that.
Well, I can't remember his name either, so we're both in the same boat. That's okay. This guy is the guy that the Republicans in the Senate said was the right guy to choose when Obama put up Sotomayor. He was the right guy when Obama put up what's the other female justice that he put up. He's the guy that the Republicans have been pushing since Obama became president, and now that Obama has agreed to put him on the bench, they won't.
No, of course.
They won't do it.
Of course. So there's another battle we need to achieve.
Well, Obama should have never appointed him. He should have gone with somebody more liberal.
Yeah.
This guy is way too middle of the road, way too conservative for me.
Well, I'm really not that familiar with his antics yet, but I'm sure we'll find out.
Well, he's a moderate. They call him a moderate because he has voted on both sides of the political spectrum. He's voted for liberal causes, and he's voted for conservative causes. He's a moderate. But Obama should have appointed somebody who had only voted for the liberal positions.
Right. Kind of curious why he did that.
Well, it was a political decision to, first of all, be the first president in a long time to actually get three Supreme Court nominees on the court. And it was an opportunity to shove it down the Republicans' throat that first they wanted this guy and now they don't.
Yeah.
This is the first time, I hope you know this, but this is the first time in the history of our country that the Senate has refused to hold hearings on, well, it's not the first time. It is the first time since 1950 that the Senate has refused to hold hearings on a justice in the final year of a presidential term. When a president appoints a justice in the final year of his term, in other words, the fourth year of his second term, this is the first time that the Senate has refused to even hold hearings.
Wow.
And that's because Republicans hate government.
That's been obvious for a long time.
Yeah. Diana, what else you got?
I think the Republicans hate people in general.
Well.
Except for themselves, of course. That's my own personal opinion.
There's a lot of Republicans out there that love people until they can breathe.
Yeah.
As long as they're in the womb, they're valuable.
Yeah.
Once they're out of the womb,
forget it. Yep.
and the truth of that, the proof of that, the irrevocable proof of that, is the refusal of the Republicans to recognize Social Security benefits for a fetus.
Oh, wow.
If they believed that a fetus was a human being, Social Security benefits would be there. When a father dies, he has Social Security benefits for his children through age 16, unless those children are unborn. And yet the Republicans want you to think that a child is a child at conception.
Yeah. Sickening.
Hypocritical.
Very.
And that's the nice way to put it.
Yeah.
Diana, you got anything else you want to get me?
No, that's just about it.
You've touched on several of my nerves. I guess I got to you a little bit, which is a great thing.
Yeah, I was sitting here burning up a little bit, but
Diana,
I've come to understand a little bit more.
Diana, I really appreciate the call. It's been great talking to you.
You too. You have a nice night.
You too. Bye for now. See you next week.
Yes, sir.
All right. That was my new best friend, Diana. She is a reasonable woman. I'm not sure about that voice in the background, but maybe he'll call next time. Jason Aldean, Tattoos on This Town. Good evening, this is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I see Big Al is in the house. He's got Judge Ford going to be on here in about 20 minutes. He's the drug court judge, and He'll be here in about 20 minutes with Big Al on his show, and I hope you'll stick around for that because it is a very good show. He does a lot of work putting it together, maybe even more than I do. Who knows? Sometimes I don't do a lot of work to put my shows together. And I don't say that... happily, really. It's just the truth. Just the truth. Donald Trump is even getting a lot more press from me than I would like. But I guess I think I'm doing it as a warning. Because I think Donald Trump is a real threat to America. I think that his approach to foreign policy, economic policy, national security issues, etc., are very dangerous positions. It was Dwight Eisenhower that in his farewell address warned us about the military-industrial complex. Of course, that was long after Thomas Jefferson warned us about a military in this country. Thomas Jefferson was probably one of the first Americans to warn us about having a standing military. He and many of the other founders of our great country warned about having a standing military. Their fear was that the military would overthrow the sitting president and have a military coup. The reality has been that by allowing corporations to become monopolistic, an overthrow was not necessary. We've always been ran by the military to a very real extent. Right now, our military spends as much on armament as the next 15 countries. It has always been that way. When Ronald Reagan was president, we were spending more money than a number of other countries were spending combined on their military. And yet he had one of the biggest military expansions since World War II, in a time of peace. And now we've got Donald Trump running, saying that our military, even though just one of our Poseidon submarines could take out an entire country that might attack us, just one of them, I'm not sure how many Poseidons we have right now, but we've got probably, I don't know, there's probably at least 15 or 20. Maybe only a dozen. But think about it. Just think about it. We have a situation where Donald Trump wants to expand our military and make it great again. What in the hell does that mean? We have the greatest military in the world, and he thinks that's not great enough? Or that's not great in some way? It's craziness. It's just campaign slogans. That's all Trump has, is campaign slogans. He has no operational plans. He's got a strategic plan. The strategic plan is the Republican plan. Divide and conquer. That's the Republican plan. Get people to vote anti-abortion. Get people to vote anti-Muslim. Get people to vote anti-black. Get people to vote anti-ABCDEFG. Divide, divide, divide. And if you can get all of those little pieces to think you're their guy, then you've got a big piece of the whole. One of the people that tried to warn our government about the Orlando shooter was a Muslim. You don't hear Trump bragging about that. You just hear Trump saying bad things about all Muslims. Divide and conquer. That's what racism is all about. Trump is not calling his Muslim tactics racist, but those are the same tactics used by the Ku Klux Klan against blacks. The same tactics. The blacks are coming to rape your women. The Muslims are coming to cut your head off. Really? And then, of course, you've got the largest terrorist organization in this country. Has roughly 5 million members in this country. Not all of those 5 million members agree with the positions of those of the group that they are a party to. At least they say they don't. Because some 85% of people in the NRA say that the NRA should increase background checks, especially against people on the no-fly list. But right now, there is a sit-in by Democrats in the House of Representatives because the NRA's Republican drones refuse to have a vote on whether or not to put people on the no-fly list on the no-buy list of guns. Right now, there is roughly 1 million, excuse me, there's roughly 1,000,000 and 2,500 people on the no-fly list. I'm sorry, I've got it wrong. Let me look it up. Roughly, it's 102,500. Now I've got it right. 102,500 people right now are on the FBI's no-fly list. 100,000 of those people on the FBI's no-fly list happen to be citizens of other countries. About 2,500 people, 2,500 people are U.S. citizens. We have 310 million people in this country. And the NRA wants to make sure that those 2,500 people can go into a gun store in Arizona and buy that gun tomorrow and drive to Chicago and kill somebody tomorrow night. The NRA wants no background checks. They don't want to improve the background checks. They want them gone. Arizona, almost no background check required to buy an AK-47. Because it's a long gun. If it were a 45 pistol, they would still be able would still have to pass the federal background check hurdles. And that could take as long as 3 days. Because you see, if you can't prove that somebody shouldn't be able to buy a gun in 3 days, give them the gun. It doesn't matter if they're crazy as a loon. Just give them the gun. Take a chance. Find romance. Walk on the wild side. The NRA is the biggest terrorist organization in this country because they will not allow reasonable gun control. The more guns that there are in people's hands, there are more people going to die from guns. Each year in this country, about 33,000 people die from being shot by a gun. About 11,000 of those people are murdered intentionally by a gun. Another 8,000 are killed by accident by a gun when 5-year-old Tommy reaches into his mom's purse and accidentally pulls the trigger on her 9mm pistol that has a safety guard incorporated into the trigger, which is the same thing as no safety at all. But the NRA wants people to be able to have those guns so little Tommy can kill his sister by accident. The rest of those people are suicides. I hate to admit it. A lot of those suicides would not be able to be stopped in any event. People would find a way to kill themselves if they want to bad enough. A lot of those people, though, would be unsuccessful. Because once you feel that knife cutting the flesh of your wrist, that's a wake-up call. Once you slam your car into the tree, the safety features of your car frequently prevent you from dying. A lot of people that try to kill themselves would fail. That millisecond it takes to pull the trigger is the end. Show's almost over. Got one more quick call. Good evening. You're on WFT. We only have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I don't like what you're saying there.
Sorry. This What's is Eric, that? Isn't it?
Huh?
This Eric?
No.
Who is this? What's your first name?
John.
Huh?
Johnny B.
Okay.
And, you know...
30 seconds.
Yeah, I got 30 seconds. I'm telling you. These goddamn guns got to get off the street. Now, you can put a hollow point in anybody and all what you people mean, but they got to get off and get rid of them. You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying. I don't think we'll have any kind of confiscation, though, but I've got to go, John.
All right.
I appreciate the call. Call again
next week.
Thank
you very much.
Bye for now.
Mm-hmm.
And... with that said, my friend Big Al is in the house. He's in the room. He's ready to rock and roll, perhaps. And I'm going to have to get out of here with a little David Rovix, Resistance. Y'all be safe till next week. Bye for now.
You can say that it's about the savages. You can say you have a better way to live. You can call it manifest destiny. You can talk of all your civilization will give. You can say that we're a thing of history, and progress is the future you will bring. You can send your armies to these mountains. You can say we'll prosper beneath your king. But there will always be resistance. The next battle will always be near. As long as you have everything, there will be those who have nothing to fear. And little by little, or maybe all at once, you will lose. Because our future is not yours to choose. You can say you've got to stop the communists. You can say that our ideals can't succeed.